You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Hear ye, hear ye. We have a review for the king.
But who is the king that shall hear our review?
Yea, verily, I do say that Netflix's hit-to-miss ratio when it comes to original movies is still bollocks.
So it's not a favorable hit-and-miss review.
Nope. Sorry, I'm just trying to be goofy just to counteract how freaking boring this movie is. Oh my gosh. Like, okay, so this is The King, the new Netflix release, which they've been trying to tout this as a possible awards contender. I hope they reconsider, first of all. But it's just, man, you look at the credentials on this. You got some talented filmmakers behind you. You got David Michaud directing this movie, who did The Rover, and he also did Animal Kingdom back in the day, and Hesher, he co-wrote that. You got some really talented actors here, like Joel Edgerton, who also co-wrote the script. You got Timothée Chalamet. You got Lily Rose Depp, which, okay, whatever, daughter of Johnny Depp kind of thing. And you got all these, you know, all these things. Ben Mendelsohn's in this. Nicholas Britell did the score. The guy who did Moonlight. Adam Arkenpaw shot this, who did True Detective. How do you get so many talented people to make such a boring freaking movie like this?
Paychecks?
I guess. I don't know. Man, I don't want to make... Okay, so when I say boring, for people listening here, I can watch a lot of movies that are slow and talky and not be bored by them, because that's not the qualification of what makes a boring film. A boring film to me is one that where, no matter how much action or lack of action is happening, if there's just nothing of importance happening in those sequences. And I feel like that's one of the biggest faults of this movie, which I should explain what it's actually about, first of all. So, Bradley, why don't you give us a gist here? Like, what is the deal with the king?
Well, the current king of England, King Henry IV, is a very angry king, and that's why war is plaguing the land. But he is quite sick with age. And I don't think they get into what he's actually sick with, other than, you know, people grow old and die.
Yeah, so they kind of skip over a bunch of details like that. Just like, just don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. So he calls upon his children to let one son know that he will rule with an iron fist in his stead. And the other son, played by Timothée Chalamet, Henry V, or Hal, as he's called, will not be the king. And Hal, of course, is the... As the popular response goes these days in these type of stories, says, I don't want it. So, a bunch of drama happens, and Hal is thrust into kinghood, even though he doesn't want it. And pretty much, that's it. But it's also a 2-hour and 20-minute movie, I think.
Yep.
And I don't really think my synopsis can be a 2-hour and 20-minute. Do you think that's a failing of the movie? Maybe it was just too short to be so long.
Here's the thing with this movie is that this is a loose adaptation of Henry IV, Part 1 and 2, and Henry V by William Shakespeare.
Right.
So it's trying to mash all these story elements into one, you know, kind of mishmash, digestible format. But the problem is when you take such literate texts like Shakespeare and you cram them all together into a big thing like this, it kind of waters down and takes out a lot of the elements that make those parts special. Because I don't know about you, but the actual writing itself, this movie, I thought was kind of weak, honestly. Like, it's just so stiff and stilted and so... It wants to aspire to grandiose pretensions, but it's got so little energy and so little wit to the way the dialogue is written that I couldn't really care one way or the other what was being said.
No, I agree with you 100%. The only time the dialogue ever has any flavor to it is if the performer actually gives it the flavor. And Timothée Chalamet, who I think is very talented and I hope does rise to the A-list someday, doesn't seem to be he doesn't really seem to be a part of the story, because he just kind of sleepwalks through everything. And maybe that's how he was directed.
I had to assume it's directing because all the actors are sleepwalking through this, except for one person who will mention it just a bit. Yeah. But honestly, that's one of the biggest things that hurts this movie so much, is that all the actors look so bored. And I don't know if that's... Like, they're trying to do this whole thing where everything's muted throughout this movie. Like, the color choices are muted, so it's just a big wash of gray throughout it. It's very simple staging and camera work overall. And all the actors... I don't know what it is, but there's something going on here where everyone's either doing, like, this kind of brooding kind of thing like this, or they're doing a whisper shout, just like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones, but they only do it at certain times to talk like this, you know? And when you have everybody talking like that, it starts to really just become monotonous and dull to listen to them talk. Like, it's actually a little to a point where it's impossible to focus on certain scenes in this movie.
No, and I agree, and there's been a strange epidemic of Shakespeare's works being adapted into, I'm going to talk to you now, Justin, but it's going to be like this. So you have to be super serious for
the Well, because I saw another movie this year kind of like that, Ophelia, which, I mean, I wouldn't say is a better movie than this. It's about the same level as pretty lackluster, mediocre. Mm-hmm. But at least there was a little bit of range in that one where people were trying to act in it. In this one, it's just, like, everyone here is a decent actor. They're just given so, everyone's just pulled down to, a 5 in their energy level. Even... Some people who have character in this never get a chance to show off that character. Like Joel Edgerton, I would argue of the core cast, outside of the other person who I want to, you know, reveal to you guys in just a second, he seems like they're trying to give him some character stuff, like some levity and some dimension, but he's only in the movie for like maybe 10 minutes of the whole film throughout. Like, not even 10 minutes in a big chunk. It's like they space him out throughout the movie to the point where you're just like, I can't even remember his name anymore. I just know him because he's Joel Edgerton.
Oh, he was John Falstaff, and I remember it because...
You only know that if you're paying attention to it, but otherwise...
Yeah, well, it's a cool name.
You know? Yeah, but you just forget that he's in there, and that's really a big problem with this movie, is that it's so focused on this dour, you know, monotone mood throughout it, that you just start to lose interest in anybody who isn't Timothée Chalamet, and even then, you're not even all that interested in what Timothée Chalamet is doing, because he has one expression throughout this entire thing. You know that resting Jon Snow face that he has throughout this whole thing? That's the... That's the only expression he has throughout the majority of this film. Just this.
I don't want it, man. I don't want responsibility.
He looks like he's going to pose for like some like, you know, magazine cover or something like that. Just, you know, just brooding existential angst throughout the entire story. It's just, and I don't get it because there's stuff that happens to him that should elicit more of a reaction. And there's like two scenes where he raises his voice in this movie, but it's way too little, way too late by that point.
Absolutely. I was wondering that too. Like, why? Where is this angst coming from? We know that he disagrees with his father, but we don't get to dive into that. Does he disagree with war entirely? Because he's really good at killing, so it can't be that. Does he disagree with the taxes? Does he disagree with trade agreements or foreign policy? No, he just comes across as a broody bitch boy who hates his dad because you're not the boss of me, you know?
Which is funny because that's even different than, you know, one, from history, but two, from the original Shakespearean adaptations, that they altered the details to be much more generic and angsty, like a modern teenager kind of thing. Yeah. And I don't get it. It sucks all the character out of him to do that. And I'm just like, because, you know, even to the point when they have this weird moment where they could have reconciled or at least come to an understanding with their characters, and it's just a, screw you, dad, at the end, you know? You're just like, well, then why should we care what happens to these people, you know?
Well, it brings up a lot of awkward dialogue because everyone he meets in a point of conflict, he opens with, I have a dad I don't like either, and I know you don't like your dad, so if we don't like our dads together... Now, maybe that's good foreign politics in today's modern society, maybe?
But not really.
But it sounds so silly in... This type of grandiose, epic British drama, you know? My dad sucks. Doesn't your dad suck, too? Anyway,
we never learn anything about Timothée Chalamet's character.
Right,
like, exactly. We get told a bunch of stuff about who he is, and the people explain to him why he's doing certain things, but we never get to actually feel like he's being motivated to do his own actions. He's just kind of being passively strung along on stuff. And like, again, his only motivation is he hates his dad, and he wants to do what his dad doesn't do. But in doing so, he does everything his dad does do, but you don't care because you don't understand his thinking behind it. So you're just like, well, why should I give a crap what this guy does? He's just a dick throughout most of the story. And honestly, it's just, that's a big thing with all these big themes surrounding this movie, where it's all about the ethics of war and the corruption of power and these kind of things. But it's handled so sloppily and so lazily that by the time they spoon feed you the story at the very last, you know, act or whatever, you're just like, I get it. No, I totally got it from the first scene movie. You don't need to spoon-feed me. War is bad and kings can do bad things to people because they have power. Boo-hoo.
Wah.
Yeah, no, and that's what I feel like. I'm just like, I just don't care. I just don't care what's happening to these people. And I should care. You know, the story of King Henry V is fascinating. I mean, he only ruled for, what, 9 years in real life? And he, the movie tries to overt any of the facts of, like, how people actually died or what actual history did happen in certain situations. It's like...
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. There's so much history to this one character that for them to do such a surface-level exploration really does the story an injustice.
No, I agree with you completely. When you said he only ruled for 9 years, my thought process right away was like... Oh, really? Well, what happened to this fellow then? I'd like to see
I mean, in real life, he died of dysentery, so they weren't going to end on that note.
That's
so.
Not too exciting.
Well, and also they changed some details in the story with like other... I mean, some of these characters were changed and altered even with the Shakespearean play, but there's other details they overtly changed for the sake of the story where you're just like, yeah, that definitely did not happen, you know, in this kind of case. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, can understand that. Yeah.
And the biggest one, I'm going to segue to talk about this one by saying a few things I actually did like. Because I will admit, I really didn't like a lot of this movie. But there's a couple things I can say that are of merit on this. And it's going to be a backhanded compliment because rather than actually recommend you watching the movie to see them, I would say go on YouTube and find the clips. But I will say this. On a production level, the actual set and costume design is fine. And... you know, more than fine. I actually think, like, the actual armor designs and the medieval costume stuff is actually fairly top-notch throughout this, you know?
Yeah, I agree completely. I never thought anything looked too cardboard or silly, because wearing that chainmail and then the steel plating over it is a real pain, and you could tell that these stuntmen were getting exhausted, or at least giving us a performance where fighting this way is exhausting, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Armor like that is not as heavy as people give, you know, make it seem to be in the myths and that kind of stuff. It's actually, you know, because they have to fight. So it has to be somewhat malleable and somewhat movable for them to be able to do these kind of fight scenes. So that's actually pretty convincing. And they make it look like it actually can move around and do practical stuff, which comes to the second compliment of this movie. There's two fight scenes. And I say two because one happens 30 minutes in and one happens an hour and 40 minutes in. So that should give you a sense of the level of energy throughout the rest of the movie. But the actual battles themselves are probably more accurate in the depiction of medieval warfare than anything else I've seen in Hollywood. Like, you know, when there's one big scene where King Henry fights another guy in a suit of armor, and the way they do the battle is very accurate to the way that, well, I mean, exaggerated a few details, but it's more or less very accurate to how actual people would fight in suits of armor. Because, you know, those things are made to protect your body, so you have to really wrestle and beat down the person to be able to get to those openings and weak spots in the person's body. Kind of thing like that.
Yes. It really showed the struggle of a fight and how, and like I always bring this up, so anybody keeping track, yes, I'm going to say this again. I really appreciate it when the person in a fight doesn't want to lose. And the way this was choreographed and filmed, you could tell, and of course it's obvious who wins these fights if you know history, but the people they're fighting against don't want to lose, don't want to die, and certainly don't want to be humiliated in battle. So it was a lot of fun, very entertaining, a lot of shoving, exhausted, angry men trying to kill each other to stay alive and for their king, yada, yada, yada. So I agree with you 100%. It was a lot of fun in those few and far in between moments.
Yeah, because even they do show the Battle of Agincourt, which, you know, it's a huge battle and credited to be one of the greatest English victories of the 100-year war kind of thing, which I can say, it's like, yeah, it was a pretty impressive feat to show that battle. It was also one of those things where the battle was good, except it did go on for a little long in the way that it was filmed, where it's like you kind of joked in The Messenger, it's almost like David Michaud saw it, it's like, not, things are getting way too exciting, come on, tone it down, everybody.
Yeah, we got a lot of names to memorize here. Stop focusing on the hits.
Yeah, but I gotta say, the one thing that I can say is a legit compliment, and I don't even know if it's all that great, but it's something that made the movie, you know, tick up a notch before, you know, before it just got completely freaking dull. Robert Pattinson, man, this guy is actually a legit great actor, and even in here, he shows up as the Dauphin, you know, I think the son of the King of France. And I don't know if his accent is hilariously awful or awesomely brilliant, But anytime he shows up in this movie, he steals the scene without any effort whatsoever. Like, he's easily the single best actor in this whole movie.
Well, not unlike all of them. I do agree with you, as you said earlier, Joel Edgerton is always bringing his A game no matter what he's in. Pattinson is making himself a presence in every scene, whether it's his snide, stuck up as hell stare at people, or his hand gestures, or like you said, that accent, or the fact that he's surprisingly taller than everyone else.
Oh, yeah, he's like 6'1", so, yeah.
And he has the two best lines in the movie, which unfortunately point out some of the problems with the movie. I won't say the lines because, you know, no spoiler, but they're very cool, you know, like, I'm probably going to say the lines that he said to someone else, and they'll be like, what are you talking about? And I'll be like, you know, it's just a cool thing to say. Good trash talker, as a Dauphin of France needs to be. And Timothée just kind of stood there and listened, like, yeah, well, I'm in the movie too, Robert, just because you got the Batman role.
Yeah, clearly this must have been Robert after he got accepted as Batman. He's just over the moon, so he's channeling into his performance. He's just like, I'm going to be Batman, and what are you going to do? You're in Dune? Ha!
Oh my gosh, I'm so worried about Dune now.
I know, right? But you know, that's the thing, is that Robert Pattinson is the only person having any fun in this movie. Because
there's
so little fun throughout any point of this movie, because it's just scene after scene after scene of people in a room talking to each other in dry monotone accents. You know, just, you know, I'm going to do this, but you can't do this because you're the king. I know, but I have to because I'm the king. And you're just
What did you think of that, though, that everything was getting so repetitive? Like, we heard from his father, played by
Ben
Mendelsohn, established, I know you don't want to be king, you're a little asshole. But then for the rest of the movie, he was like, you over there, do you know me? I'm Henry, and I don't want to be king. And the guy's like, I know, everyone knows Henry. You keep telling everybody over and over and over again.
I don't want it.
We get it. You're here because you're better than us. Which is why he comes across as an asshole. But how is it just not something that's going to happen anymore, where leaders are filmed that we want to root for?
Well, the problem is, I mean, you can show a movie with a charismatic leader. Like, honestly, I would say to people, if you want to watch a really good movie about King Henry V, go look up Kenneth Branagh's version, King Henry V, from 1989, because that movie is great. Like, it does everything right, because one, it's the actual Shakespeare adaptation, you know, from the play, and two, that movie shows the idea of having a charismatic, complicated, but interesting leader with the way that Kenneth Branagh performs King Henry V, you know?
And he was like the king of those Shakespeare adaptations back in the day, right?
He is still the king of those Shakespeare adaptations.
Oh, awesome. Like, all right.
Like, nobody does Shakespeare better than Branagh. And that's the problem, is that I watched some clips of that after I saw this movie, and that just highlighted everything that was wrong with this movie, where that one had, like, there's that famous sequence where he does the big speech, which is like a 5-minute long monologue from Kenneth Branagh. And that scene is so magnetic and charismatic, and you cannot take your eyes off Kenneth Branagh during that scene, because he's just chewing the scenery like crazy, but he's doing it so expertly. Where in here, there's never that moment in this movie. There's never a moment where you care about Timothée Chalamet, where he actually earns the charisma or the effort that he should have to be a promising ruler. He's just Weasley looking throughout this whole thing. He's just a whiny little turd throughout this. Like, it's just, again, it's like, maybe the actual King Henry V is like that, but you still need to make a reason for me to care. And I never did. And that's why anytime Robert Pattinson showed up, he was just brimming full of energy and just like, ho, I am the bad guy. I'm a French villain, and I'm going to kill everybody in this scene. And you're just like, look, he's a cartoon character, but please just keep him around. But that's also part of the problem, that he's only in like 7 minutes of this whole movie whenever Robert Pattinson shows up, you know? Yeah. Like, what is happening here?
I think it's great that he's being played or that he's taken on the mantle of the bat. But after this movie, I'm kind of disappointed he's not going to be a bat villain, because I think he'd knock it out of the park.
Honestly, now that makes me really excited to see him and Paul Dano fight each other in the movie, because I'm just like, wow, you got Paul Dano, super Weasley man, on this side, and then you got crazy Robert Pattinson on this side. It's going to be a great combination.
You know, Paul Dano's also a very underrated actor, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. No, Paul Dano's great. I was like, that was spot on casting when they picked him for the movie. So I can't wait to see what they do with that. And honestly, though, that is the point you made, where I'm like, after seeing Timothée Chalamet in this, I'm really worried about Dune. Because look, I trust Denis Villeneuve because he's a great director. But I don't know what it is. I've seen Timothée Chalamet be better in other movies, but he's just, you know, honestly, I thought he was actually kind of awful in this movie.
Like, right. Sorry, but I'm concerned that Denis Villeneuve, is that how you say it?
Villeneuve, yeah.
Is going to make the same mistake here as this director and said, oh, Timothée, play it confused and bored. You know?
I think the biggest problem here is that Timothée was miscast for the role. Like, this maybe. Didn't. Because, I mean, the problem with Timothée and his other movies is that when you see, like, Lady Bird or Call Me By Your Name, he fits that very boyish, you know, naive, but also angsty kind of part. Here, it felt like it was a bad matching of his talents to the character, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It could be in the writing as well. Like, I think after all this was said and done, I was saying maybe he was supposed to care about his men, but there was never a scene written in which it comes across that he does.
He doesn't care about anybody. Like, literally, he has no connection with any. Yeah. Like, and even the one relationship they try to establish with him and Joel Edgerton, you never feel anything for that, because anytime Joel Edgerton tries to attach to him, he's just like, no, you betray me all the time. Oh, no, you talk behind my back all the time. I don't trust you. Even the part when that resolves more or less near the end, you don't feel anything for that sequence.
Right. You know? It kind of seems more like a celebrity and his agent, not a celebrity and his best friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's just a shame. I don't know what else to say about this movie. It's just, it was such a freaking boring movie to watch. And I, again, that will sound very pedestrian to most people listening, but it's just a waste of time. There were honestly huge stretches of this movie where Lexi and I were just sitting there and we just start to look at our phones, we start playing with our computers. And it wasn't because I wasn't trying to watch it, but at one point, even Timothée tells another character that it was impossible for him to care about what was happening in that scene. And I'm like, yeah, you and me both, buddy.
I remember that.
To like, yeah, a preacher, I'm just like, wow, this movie's writing the jokes for me.
Yeah, it's a little bit too self-aware, maybe.
I have to wonder. But that also requires this movie to have any sense of humor about itself, because it really, you know, and this is, again, the problem that I have with David Michaud lately as a director, is that he really wants to be taken seriously as this, like, art director. But his last few movies, his last few movies have really kind of sucked. Like, War Machine, I think, did you see that one, Bradley?
Well, maybe he thinks art has to be boring, and he's doing this on purpose.
He tried to be funny, quote, with War Machine, but that movie was just so...
Was that a comedy?
It was supposed to be, but it was so not funny that it was like... Wow, I think he just doesn't know how to direct movies anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't finish it. My bad.
That's the thing. It's like, it tries so hard to have, like, funny moments. Ha ha, get it? It's a satire. It's a self-aware comedy about the state of the war. But it's not insightful or funny, so it's just a dull, dramatic, dry piece of toast, honestly.
Yeah,
and that's, this is even that, but with less humor, so it's just burnt toast in the case. Ugh, so
the worst kind.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know what else to really say other than a couple of things. I just thought that while I praised the production design, I actually thought the cinematography was really ugly in this movie. You know, like, there were so many scenes of just washed out, darkly lit, gray color tones throughout this that I couldn't... It was hard to even see certain things in this movie. Like, I couldn't see faces very well during certain close-up shots.
No, and I agree. It's very bland, very wishy-washy. Nothing really jumps out until Pattinson shows up.
I also thought the music was really bad too. Like, because the music is only like three notes being played on loop throughout this movie. Just the wah or wah or wah, and there's no range to them. It's like all the performances. They're just that one note for like 2 minute stretches.
Like the guy or the girl mailed it in on that day. Like. That's a nice.
Well, and that's sad because it's Nicholas Britell, who wrote some really amazing music for Beale Street and Moonlight. You know?
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, yeah, I'm like, what did he just? Like I said, did he just, like, you know, press some keys on a keyboard and just go, okay, here we go, the score for the king.
Oh, yeah, maybe they sent him over the footage, and he's like, okay, I have to match this lack of inspiration to the footage.
Yeah. So
and then he yawned.
I don't know what else to say. So, Bradley, why don't we wind down to final thoughts here? What do you think?
I don't hate it. I don't love it. I'll probably forget it in a couple of days. It did have some pretty badass fight scenes that were really entertaining to watch. I'm very sad that the characters I did want to learn about kept having to remind me, no, I'm a secondary. Sorry about that. Boring, yeah. McNocare, don't want it. It's the lead you should love. I'm like, but John Falstaff, Joel Edgerton, I want to follow your character around. And same with Ben Mendelsohn as Henry IV. He was chewing scenery really well, and he was kind of fun. But alas, 'twas not to be. I'm going to give this, though, 5 Hellbows. That's an elbow from hell for all of you uninitiated with the MMA scene. On 10 battlefields.
Yeah, this definitely will. I mean, this needed some like WWE commentary on some of these things. Like, oh, and then King Henry tackled the guy. Oh, he's got him in a headlock.
Kind of that tricky bastard. He tripped his friend. Yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't like this movie very much. I was kind of bummed because it's funny because we're supposed to have another person on this review, but they actually couldn't make it because 10 minutes in, they fell asleep watching this movie. So. That should tell you something about this film. It's just so ineffectual. And honestly, again, go watch Kenneth Branagh's version. It's 30 years old, but it's much better than this movie. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 mechanical birds that reminded me of Bubo from Clash of the Titans.
Oh, yeah, little Bubo.
Yeah, you notice how everyone is like, oh, what is that sorcery, this witchcraft, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, if I saw that, my mind would be blown. That would have been the awesomest thing ever in that time period. Just like, dude, a mechanical bird? That's amazing.
Yeah, the king just starts shouting, end the war. I have found peace in my heart.